Well, guys, I'm going to need some help tonight. Need some help preaching. I'm glad Terry Dorsey's back here tonight. Really, what I mean with help tonight is I'm looking to only cover 7 verses. So we're going to be in Mark chapter 4, verses 35 through 41. And then what's somewhat customarily in here, I'm going to ask a volunteer or volunteers to read the entire 4th chapter of Mark. And then we will open it back up for participation, interaction, everything along those lines. Let me encourage you again. I've tried to do this several times by way of encouragement. Let me encourage you in this, that if you have a reading plan or some kind of devotional or something that you've been doing in the Scriptures, let's take, for example, going through the Bible in a year, and maybe you faltered. I think that was one of the words from the song that we just sang. Maybe you faltered and you feel like, man, I'm not going to be able to attain that. I'm not going to be able to achieve that. I'm so far behind. Let me encourage you and just start tonight or tomorrow morning. Just pick right back up. Either back where you left off or where your devotional is for the day. And I say that in the same with regards to those of you who are going with us through Mark. As we're finishing up chapter 4 tonight, maybe you hadn't been in chapters 2 and 3. That's okay. Pick back up tomorrow morning, chapter 5. And I do that by way of encouragement. I periodically have a brother that shoots me text, and one of the texts that he shot me the other day was from Philippians 3:13. He really likes it. I do too. But again, he reiterates for him the practicality of this. Here's what the verse says. Forgetting what is behind, I press on toward what is ahead. I'm not going to go on to finish that in there, but let that application, that principle resonate if it would with you. I've said before in here, that doesn't have to just be what you perceive as your past defeats. That can be past victories. We've said before in here that yesterday's victories won't fight today's or tomorrow's battles. And so I say that also if you feel like you've faltered in some areas. Pick right back up. Mark chapter 4, verse 35. I'll read the 7 verses and then we'll start making our way through this. And let me go ahead and remove this. It says, on that day when evening had come, he said to them, let us go across to the other side. And leaving the crowd, they took him with them in the boat just as he was, and other boats were with him. And a great windstorm arose, and the waves were breaking into the boat, so that the boat was already filling. But he was in the stern, asleep on the cushion. And they woke him and said to him, teacher, do you not care that we are perishing? And he awoke and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, peace, be still. And the wind ceased, and there was great calm. And he said to them, why are you so afraid? Have you still no faith? And they were filled with great fear and said to one another, who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey him? Incredible, incredible passage. If you would, I'm not going to have you in many places tonight as far as looking in other scriptures. But if you would, go ahead and just put a finger over in Jonah. You know, some books take us a little longer to get to, so just maybe go ahead and have you a finger over there in Jonah. You can keep another finger in the text that we were in from Mark 4 if you'd like. Mark 4:36, when it said, leaving the crowd, they took with them the boat just as he was, and other boats were with him. Mark's the only gospel out of these three that actually include that detail. And it's characteristic of Mark and some of the other Gospels to kind of give you this eyewitness detail of little things. Now again, this is probably Peter. Obviously Peter is on this boat. And this is just one of those little details that you're like, wow, why is that in there? And what's interesting is we don't hear anything else about these boats. Even in the midst of this storm, we don't hear ultimately their end or their fate. And it's one of those deals. Now, the reason I asked you to turn to Jonah, if you were there, one commentator just suggested this. He said in Jonah chapter 4, the very last verse, verse 11. Can't give the full context of the book, but what a fascinating story life of Jonah is. And it says, "And should not I pity Nineveh, that great city in which there are more than 120,000 persons who do not know their right hand from their left, and also much cattle." Do you see that little thing tacked on there at the very end? "And also much cattle." Go see how much commentators really comment on that little last thing that's interjected in there. And what this individual was suggesting was that in those kind of details, perhaps this, with regards to these other boats, is the mercy of God's nature, His characteristic of mercy in this regard. That as we go through this story and we see Jesus, the Son of Man, the Son of God, ceasing the storm, those other boats who were alongside benefited from the mercy of God. And just as God is bestowing mercy upon the 120,000. Now when it says, you know, they don't know their right hand from their left, what most people are saying there is those are little children. And probably with some mentally challenged individuals along the lines. But primarily when you look at that great number, 120,000, most people believe that that's depicting little children. And then you have the cattle tacked on. So in other words, the mercy of God being merciful unto these little children in Nineveh is the disposition of the Father's heart. Jonah didn't share that when you go through the story. And even the cattle, if you will, recipients of mercy. And you said, well, for how long though? You know, but anyway, that's just one little tidbit, perhaps from Mark 4. One guy, and this is by no means directly what the text itself is meaning, but one guy just said, and I thought it would be apt, as we're going through looking at parenting and father and mother's roles inside of here from Ephesians 5, one of them said, "Dad, fathers, beware, there's other little boats, man, with their eyes on you." Other little boats wanting to keep their eyes on Jesus and those that were with Jesus going to that other side. Verse 37. Actually, while you're still there in Jonah, let me do this. I said I wasn't going to go through the whole story, and I'm not. But please flip to chapter 1 and allow me to read three verses from chapter 1. Jonah chapter 1, verse 4. "But the Lord hurled a great wind upon the sea, and there was a mighty tempest on the sea, so that the ship threatened to break up. Then the mariners were afraid, and each cried out to his God, and they hurled the cargo that was in the ship into the sea to lighten it for them. But Jonah had gone down into the inner part of the ship, and had lain down and was fast asleep, so that," verse 6, "the captain came and said to him, 'What do you mean, you sleeper? Arise, go call to your God. Perhaps the God will give a thought to us that we may not perish.'" Parents. Verse 6 may be a neat little way to wake your kids up in the morning. "What do you mean, oh sleeper?" And then you just have them really start right up in there. But really, one of the reasons I had you look back at chapter 1, the concept of Jonah in the midst of this storm. Look at verse 4. "But the Lord hurled a great wind upon the sea, and Jonah was down asleep." And in Matthew chapter 12, one of the things that it says, one greater than Jonah is here. So that's a little indicator. That's not a parallel passage. The parallel passage in Matthew tonight's Matthew chapter 8, not 12. But the one that they're in the presence of is one that's greater than Jonah. So back to Mark chapter 4, verse 37. "A great windstorm arose, and the waves were breaking into the boat, so that the boat was already filling." Now, there is something about, in verse 38, with this is what's going on outside. Now, these men weren't sissies. These men had been accustomed to these kind of storms, man, on the Sea of Galilee. And man, they were frightened. And we're going to look at some of that language. But I'd want to step into some application on a number of things from verse 37 and 38, kind of how they're done there together. One of them, man, have you ever been awakened by your feet being cold? You say, what in the world are you talking about? Well, you can't help but to think, man, there's water filling inside of here, and the Lord had been doing so much ministry that He's asleep. He's asleep. And we'll get there. But here's one of the most fascinating things. Here's what some of the old people referred to. Some of the old preachers referred to this. He was sleeping the sleep of the just. And here's some application time for us, hopefully. Have you ever been at night consumed in your sleep with worry? And or have you ever wrestled around because your conscience isn't clean or clear? Now, not everybody make eye contact all at once. And the reason I say that is that kind of sleep, if you are right with God, and I'm talking about for His children, you can have peaceful, restful night sleep, but not if a couple things. And thank God for our conscience, and thank God for the Holy Spirit by convicting our conscience to where He doesn't give you a peace about it. And yet the Son of Man, the Son of God, is sleeping in the midst of this tumultuous storm. And that's just so powerful. Now, here's the thing. Here's what I want us to be careful about tonight on this text. Maybe this text is new to you. Maybe it's not new to you at all. Maybe you've heard about it or read over it 50-something plus times. And that's okay, but here's a little principle. Here's something that I don't want you to allow to do with anything. Don't allow familiarity to snub out your sense of awe and wonder of who these men were in the presence of and who indwells you if you've been born again and bought by Jesus Christ. And here's one of the reasons I'm saying that. Because when you're going through this narrative, you already know the end in a couple verses. But when you're walking through life's storms, you don't know when or if those winds are going to cease. And the reason I can say if is because many saints have been called home in the midst of storms. So, one of the practical applications that you can do is in the midst right now of life's storm, you have an incredible advantage that they didn't have. I don't believe these men knew that God in the flesh was in that boat with them. And one of the reasons is because they addressed Him as teacher. I think we take for granted a lot of times that they had all their theology completely worked out. We benefited from certain things, man. We stand on the backs of individuals who have gone before us. Verse 38. They awoke Him and said to Him, Teacher, that's what I referred to, do you not care that we are perishing? Have you put yourself in the predicament when whatever storm you're in, the Lord seems so incredibly distant, and you say, Lord, do you not care that my vehicle is broke down? I don't have enough money to pay my electric bill. I don't know how rent's going to get taken care of. Why is my son in the hospital? Do you not even care? And if you're the Lord's, He absolutely, intimately cares. In fact, I'll wait because I'm going to comment on this in verse 39. What I was saying is that the Lord who can cease these storms did that very thing in demonstrating who He was in those deals. Verse 39, where it says, He rebuked the wind. Rebuked the wind. Some people have made a deal out of that verb, rebuked. I believe back in chapter 1, verse 25, it's that same kind of rebuke when He's casting out demons. And some people have speculated, are we saying, now think about this, and maybe we can get to this in some of our discussion tonight. When He rebuked that storm, had God already allowed Satan, similar to Job chapter 1, verse 19, to be able to be bringing this particular storm on? Because He did it in Job 1. But there's a concept in Romans 8. You can write these down for those of you who are taking notes. We're not going to look all there. But in Romans 8, verse 20 through 22, talks about creation itself is even at odds and in opposition against man because of a fall. And it's groaning in travail waiting for the liberation and the captivity of it to be fully redeemed and reconciled to the Creator itself. And so there's some, like I said, because of the concept of the rebuke there, get a little caught up with that. I don't think you necessarily have to, but it may just be one of those kind of questions that you enjoy to just spin around and contemplate and think about. Storms normally subside gradually, but when the Creator gave the order, the natural elements of this storm ceased immediately, John MacArthur says. Now, in verse 40, He said to them, Why are you afraid? Have you still no faith? And this is a question that these disciples, these apostles, receive a number of times with regards to areas of lack of faith. The vast majority of people think, based on verse 35, is perhaps what the direct rebuke is coming from. Because on verse 35, He said, On that day when evening had come, He said to them, Let us go across to the other side. In other words, we are going to make it to the other side, is what some commentators are interjecting in there. So, I'm not going to be one who's going to get caught up because of my areas where I fall and fail in regards to lack of faith and everything along those lines. Similar in one sense to some of the sermons that have been going on and inside of here that you've heard from James, when not dealing directly, but the concept of the prophet Elijah. But here's where we got to be careful. We can't allow, because of our own frailty, and that we are people with feet of clay, to sit there, and I'm not talking specifically about this, but to be to the point to where we feel like, hey, every single act, because we're simply people with feet of clay, is okay before the Lord. And I'm not talking directly about this passage. So don't come up to me afterwards saying, man, well, I don't think he was being that harsh on them and everything along those lines. I'm talking about as a general principle. It's very easy for us in our fallen nature to sit there and just, well, good night, everybody does, and just go on with these things. When there's a command and there's these expectations and different things from the Lord, I believe with the command comes the empowerment. Again, I'm not talking about these texts here tonight. This is more of a general thing. With the command comes the empowerment, but not in the natural. That's when we get into the thing of faith. Peter walking on the water by faith. Verse 41, And they were filled with great fear and said to one another, Who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey Him? I'm going to do some quotes tonight. That's a little bit different. I'm going to actually read a portion here in a few minutes, and then it'll be time for some class or group interaction. One of the things, again, MacArthur quotes on, is he says, The only thing more terrifying than the storm outside of the boat is to have God inside of the boat. There's a book now, and it's by a different title, so me even throwing the title out there is not going to do you much good. I'll still do it. It's called The Psychology of Atheism by R.C. Sproul. And one of the things that he does in that book, for those of y'all that have been subjected to people questioning you and trying you in your faith and everything along the lines, a lot of one of those common questions is, Sir, you're weak and you need a crutch. And therefore your Christianity gives you this little crutch. And in one of those areas where you really need that crutch are when, quote-unquote, Mother Nature and natural disasters come looming
And because you don't have the spine to be able to handle that, you want to huddle up together. Can you tell that I've interacted at all with them? And what you want to do is you want to huddle up and hold hands and come to your little prayer meetings and everything along those lines. And so, you know, again, we're dealing with a storm here. You think of tsunamis, hurricanes, you fill in the blank. The reason I mentioned the book from Sproul is hear what he does to reverse that. And he said, okay, fair enough. You want to accuse us of pie in the sky and all these things and everything along the lines. One of the things that you, even if you can or cannot admit it to yourself, fear is that God who is in the boat in the midst of this particular storm is the very one that you're going to have to stand before and give an account for every idle word that's come off your mouth, sir. And I don't think that gives you a real nice sense of peace at night. So you drink it into oblivion, or you sit there and have hardened your heart, and God's already handed you over to a seared conscience. But that, I mean, again, this is a generalization because not every atheist has to, you know, cheat with the secretary. Okay? But that's one of the reasons we preach so hard here against moralism. But some people say, if you want to know why most people are unbelievers, again, this is a generalization, follow them home after work for about 2 weeks straight. See what their interests and hobbies are. Again, I should have got to be careful even with that statement. But, all right. Okay, tell you what I'm going to do. For those of y'all who are taking notes, I'm going to give some references, and we're going to actually look at one more passage, and then I'm going to close this out with a quote. If you would, go ahead and make your way to Psalm 107. Psalm 107, I'm going to read that here briefly. Is anybody taking notes? Anybody want any references? Nobody taking notes? That's fine. We'll enter into some quiz here in a little bit on all of chapter 4 during the Q&A. Really, some of those references are Job 38, verses 8 through 11. Job chapter 38, verses 8 through 11. Psalm 65, verses 5 through 8. Psalm 65, verses 5 through 8. One last one would be Psalm 89, verses 8 and 9. Psalm 89, verses 8 and 9. I have you in Psalm 107. I'm going to read from 23 through 32, probably. Psalm 107, verse 23. Some went down to the sea in ships, doing business on great waters. They saw the deeds of the Lord, His wondrous works in the deep. For He commanded and raised the stormy wind, which lifted up the waves of the sea. They mounted up to heaven, they went down to the depths, their courage melted away in their evil plight. They reeled and staggered like drunken men, and were at their wits' end. Then they cried to the Lord in their trouble, and He delivered them from their distress. He made the storm be still, and the waves of the seas were hushed. Then they were glad that the waters were quiet, and He brought them to their desired haven. Let them thank the Lord for His steadfast love, for His wondrous works to the children of man. Let them extol Him in the congregation of the people, and praise Him in the assembly of the elders. Now, I'm going to read a portion from St. Augustine, or Augustine, depends on who you listen to or talk to. They're talking about the same guy on the pronunciation. And a lot of times he'll get charged with being, you know, he allegorizes everything or whatever on this. And rightfully so. I mean, there's some things, I'm not saying this is directly by any means what this passage that we read tonight, that the Holy Spirit intended directly to convey and mean. But I think there's some good nuggets in here. As far as I want to conclude just with some of these principles, it takes just a few minutes, and then, like I said, we're going to just open it up, man, in some Mark chapter 4. So, here we go. This is from some of his old sermons. When you have to listen to abuse, that means you are being buffeted by the wind. When your anger is roused, you were being tossed by the waves. That contemporary song, man, about he who can control that. The storm is control that individual inside of you, that old man, that wrath. Greater is, you know, he who can control his own spirit than he who can conquer 10 cities from the Proverbs. So when the winds blow and the waves mount high, The boat is in danger. Your heart is imperiled. Your heart is taken a battering. On hearing yourself insulted, you long to retaliate. But the joy of revenge brings with it another kind of misfortune, shipwreck. Why is this? Because Christ is asleep in you. What do I mean? I mean you have forgotten His presence. Rouse Him, then remember Him. Let Him keep watch within you. Pay heed to Him. A temptation arises. It is the wind. It disturbs you. It is the surging of the sea. This is the movement to awaken Christ and let Him remind you of those words. Who can this be? Even the winds and the sea obey Him. Charlotte, could I have you read all of Mark chapter 4? If you want to break it off, I'll let you designate someone else. But if you don't mind reading that, and then open it up just for the rest of our time here with Q&A. Thank you, Charlotte. Well, it doesn't have to be questions. I said Q&A, but we got 15 minutes. I know you get tired of, you know, sport analogies or whatever, but we're in the fourth quarter, so let's not just quit here. Jim? Yeah.